So here we are with this precious opportunity to pause midweek, midday. So I invite you to sit with intention as we gather our attention. You might let yourself take care in arranging the body in a way that invites an alertness, an awakeness in the body and the mind. Perhaps lengthening through the spine. Sitting in a way that shoulders are stacked over hips. Knees over ankles if you're sitting in a chair, or if you're on cushions, maybe a slight tuck to the pelvis that allows the spinal column to grow out of the pelvic bowl like the stem of a flower. Which supports the opening of the heart. And a releasing and a relaxing through the shoulders. Balancing this alertness with a quality of ease. A sense of support. Softening through the muscles of the face. We often spend so much energy expressing ourselves, or sometimes masking ourselves. So this period of practice is an opportunity for the face to let go of working. To release and rest. Opening slightly through the jaw. Letting the arms hang from the shoulder sockets. Finding a comfortable position for hands so that palms and fingers can relax. Opening through the belly. Noticing and letting go of any tension that might be present in the legs or the feet. Nothing required of the lower body for this next while. allowing each exhalation to be an opportunity for letting go. The space that's created by the out-breath, allowing for renewal with the next inhalation. So with the breath, we let life move through us. The arising and passing of each breath, simply a natural expression of the waves of change that are part of life. You might invite your attention in closer to the in-breath. Inviting an intimacy coming to know the felt sense, not the idea of the in-breath, but the incremental experience, the felt sense of the lungs filling, the breath entering the nostrils. The sensations in the throat, in the windpipe, in the lungs, maybe even the abdomen or beyond. We often feel the breath in the entire body and opening to the wave of each in-breath. Coming in close, you might see that the in-breath itself has a beginning, a middle, and an end. Just letting yourself attend to, be curious about, the full experience of each in-breath. You might allow the intimacy of your attention to transfer to the exhalation, passing through that slight pause at the top of an in-breath, and in that gap between in-breath and out-breath, gathering your awareness, and then letting the awareness caress the trajectory of the next exhalation. Seeing if it's possible to feel the turning of the breath, the beginning of the out-breath. Perhaps coming to notice that each exhalation also has a beginning, a middle, and an end. Perhaps widening the view of your awareness to again notice the entirety of the waves of the breath. Feeling the arising and passing of each breath cycle. Not something you can hold on to, simply something you can experience. Moment by moment, breath by breath. And as we come to the final minutes of our practice together today, may this intimacy with the arising and passing of the breath be a support in meeting the arising and passing of all things in life. The truth of beginnings and endings. So that we might meet life and let it flow through us a life where there can be a measure of ease and peace and freedom from the struggle, from the suffering of fighting change. May it be so. So we continue today with this exploration of the five remembrances, these practices that are a gateway into inquiring into these different dimensions of impermanence that characterize all things. And last week we explored death as a characteristic, and this week we look at the fourth remembrance. Everyone and everything I love is of the nature to change. There's no way to escape being separated from them. So this truth of loss as part of life. Yeah. Francis Weller says, we're learning to become an apprentice to sorrow because loss moves through the entire landscape of our lives. Right? Loss moves through the entire landscape of our lives. Beginnings and endings are happening all day long with each and every breath. Yeah, there's this thread of continuity that as long as there's life moving through this body, there's breath, but it's actually the series of change. You know, a breath comes and it goes, and another one comes and it goes. So there's this chain of continuity, but on the intimate level, there is this arising and passing that has so much to teach us. And it can be a helpful taste of what's the flavor of the experience of not holding on. Most of us don't take a breath and try to hold on to it. Because if we did, we'd be in trouble, right? We let it come and we let it go. But we try to hold on to all kinds of things. You know, our belongings, our beloveds, you know, our sense of identity, our sense of place, you know. How many of you have lamented, like, oh, you know, town has changed so much in the last however many decades, or there's so many more people, or, you know, there's less of this or more of that. And, you know, we just, everything and everyone I love, right? Whether it's an open space or uncrowded streets or no traffic, or, you know, my best friend who moves away, or my beloved animal who ages and dies, or a beloved friend or family member. So loss is such a great teaching. Rebecca Solnit, in her book, A Field Guide to Getting Lost, speaks to, you know, this experience of loss, saying, lost really has two disparate meanings. Losing things is about the familiar falling away. Getting lost is about the unfamiliar appearing. There are objects and people that disappear from your sight or knowledge or possession. You lose a bracelet, a friend, the key. You still know where you are. Everything is familiar except that there is one less item, one missing element. Or you get lost, in which case the world has become larger than your knowledge of it. Either way, there is a loss of control. The art is not one of forgetting, but letting go. And when everything else is gone, you can be rich in loss. You know, so I like this quote in that I find that loss and the sense of being lost often go together. She makes these distinctions, and yet sometimes when I sit with people, or when I've sat with my own experience of loss, those two experiences bleed together. You know, she says, in one, you know, there's one missing item and you still know where you are. And then in the other, it's like you get lost and the world becomes larger than your knowledge of it. And sometimes those actually are almost one in the same experience, right? If we lose a really dear friend, the world becomes larger in a way, like we feel lost in the face of loss sometimes. It's like, how do I comprehend this world that is different? And I think it's important to be very compassionate and tender with ourselves in this territory of loss and of getting lost, because the world is this flow, right? It's this flow of experience, and we can't rely on it. We can't rely on recognizing where we are sometimes day to day, year to year. It's like, oh, things are moving and changing. And this also has quite a bit to teach us about that sense of self, right? Because that's the other dimension of this exploration this time around. And Rebecca Solnit points to this process or practice of letting go. So what is that exactly? Jack Engler puts it this way. He speaks of letting go in terms of mourning. 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 And he says, mourning, letting go of the way we want things to be, is much harder than coming to understand that we must let go. We seldom, if ever, just accept anything, especially anything that threatens our safety and security, what we feel we need to survive. Most of the time, when reality doesn't accord with our wish or the way we think things should be, we only come to accept it gradually, haltingly, sometimes with despair, always with resistance. Without grieving what we are being forced to give up, we don't let go. Grief work is precisely about coming to acceptance of a new state of affairs in which something we have cherished is absent. Through the work of mourning, insight becomes truth. Maladaptive clinging and desperate holding on are surrendered, and we start to live again. So he's pointing to this cyclical nature, you know, like we have to gift ourselves time and space and practice to come into, to grow into acceptance, to mourn, to grieve. This is really the rich, fertile territory of grief work, which is really important in this life. And I think especially in this world we're living in, where so many things are falling away, really, in what we've known socially, politically, environmentally. He goes on to say this, experiencing the reality of anicca, dukkha, anatta, impermanence, suffering, and not self, in each and every moment is the ultimate threat to our ego and security. Coming to an acceptance of these truths, these three characteristics we've been playing with, which run counter to everything we want to believe and evoke, the archaic sense of not existing, is the work that leads to awakening. Not concentration, not insight, but acceptance. So loss is often this huge threat to our sense of self. You know, we sort of calibrate this sense of self in relationship to all these other things, all these other reference points. And when things start to fall away, impermanence, suffering, and not self, are really threatening to the ego. So we try to hold on to stuff, to experience, to reality as we know it, so we can hold on to the self. And so this work of accepting, of fading the sense of self, is actually the path to awakening that he's pointing to. Maybe I'll just share one more quote, and then we'll play with just these few ideas in small groups. This one comes, it's referencing the work of William Blake, but it's a quote from Mark Nepo. And he says, Blake reversed the process of printmaking into relief etching, in which all the excess is carved or worn away, and a print is then made from the ink that lines the raised edges that remain. This process reflects more closely Blake's notion of the human journey as one in which experience wears away all that is non-essential, revealing the divine already present in every person. Here, the shape and meaning of who we are is discovered or revealed by what is left standing once experience carves or wears away what is not lasting in us. So I'll just offer that as an invitation to a possible reframe. You know, we often view loss as a diminishment, sometimes as a devastation, And in some ways, it's actually a releasing or a freedom. It brings us home to the essential in some way. So, a few, musings on loss and how you might relate to it, and I will maybe gift you a little time in pairs, and you can just see if any of this resonates for you. And I'll look forward to seeing you in a few minutes, and we'll come back together for a closing. Enjoy each other's company. So welcome back. We'll just see if there's anything briefly that wants to be spoken from your exploration. Thank you. Yeah. And I might just circle us back, part of this, you know, this practice of apprenticing to sorrow and loss is the cultivation of compassion that you're pointing to, and also the potential portal to living and loving fully, you know. And maybe I'll close with a short quote by Somerset Maugham. You know, he says, "Nothing in the world is permanent, and we're foolish when we ask anything to last. But surely we're still more foolish not to take delight in it while we have it." Yeah. So, you know, part of what loss can open us to is the beauty, the preciousness, the poignancy, and the possibility of deep presence and connection with that preciousness while it's here, to not take it for granted.